From Yellowstone National Park, this is What We Do. I'm Brett Rayburn.
And I'm Jake Frank.
So I have a question for you to kick this off.
Okay.
What's the biggest fish that you've ever caught?
The biggest fish I've ever caught, I used to live in Alaska and I went halibut fishing and I caught like a 40-pound halibut. Okay. That's the biggest I've ever caught.
That's way bigger than I thought you were going to say. I was expecting.
And that's like a
much less impressive size.
Well, that's a fairly unimpressive halibut. Okay. So for that species anyway.
All right. Well, you've got me beat.
Are you big into fishing?
No, about the only fishing I do is when I'm fishing through the freezer for frozen cod that I get from the store. So that's about as much as I do.
Before you cook it, do you like hold it out way in front of you and have someone take a picture so it looks bigger?
I have been known to do that. All right. Yeah. Follow my Instagram for all that content. So you've caught some pretty impressive fish, it sounds like.
Not really.
If you turn over that paper in front of you, there's something on there that I would like you to try to pronounce. You have not seen this before, so this is
Joe, right? Let's see. Can I sound it out? So, Ankorhynchus clarki Lewisi. I was way off.
I actually don't know. This is like one of those trivia questions I don't even know the right answer to. So, sure, you did well.
All right.
That's better than I would have done.
But my guess is that this is the binomial name for the Yellowstone cutthroat trout?
Yes, that is the scientific name for the West Slope cutthroat trout.
The West Slope, not the Yellowstone. Yep. Okay. All right.
And so today we're going to talk to somebody who probably can pronounce it better than you just did, although I still think that was a pretty good guess. Our guest today is Pat Bigelow, a fisheries biologist who spends a lot of her time on the waters of Yellowstone National Park. So welcome, Pat. How's it going?
Hey, Brett. And hey, Jake. It's going great. It's a beautiful day today.
Yeah,
it is.
And you did pretty good, Ankorhynchus.
Ankorhynchus. All right. So I was in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I loved the Lewisi Clarki.
Is that how you say it? Or is it a long I?
That works. Lewisi Clarki. Yep.
That's awesome.
All right.
I wonder where that came from.
I don't speak a lot of Latin.
So I guess we'll just jump right into it. How long have you been working as a fisheries biologist? Well, as any job, how long have you been at Yellowstone National Park?
I've been here in this job for 23 years.
Wow.
I've been working in fisheries for 36 years, probably.
So fresh out of middle school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was really fortunate that I got some great opportunities early in life.
Very cool.
And so how did you get your start here 23 years ago?
Actually, my first fish job was here in 1979.
Wow.
Okay. I was in Bozeman working a summer job and I went down to the unemployment office to see, if I could just get something better. And there was a poster up on the wall for Young Adult Conservation Corps in Yellowstone National Park. And I jumped at it. It sounded interesting. I came down here. We had a, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Yak Camp. But when we were actual core members, we had a girls' dorm, boys' dorm, and a dining hall. And six core members to a room. You each had a bunk bed, a footlocker, and half of a clothes locker, and no dividers or anything like that. You know, you definitely felt like you had just been recruited into some kind of institution.
Some ways it is that, maybe.
Yeah. But it was great because we had 100 core members who all worked for different offices in the park. And I was very fortunate, a friend of mine and I that started at the same time, to work with Fish and Wildlife Service. And back then, Fish and Wildlife Service did the fisheries work in Yellowstone.
When did that change? That went from fisheries like
to Park Service?
Yeah, to Park Service.
I think it was in 96.
Okay.
So Fish and Wildlife Service started here even before the Park Service because of the unique fisheries opportunities and the Yellowstone cutthroat in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then they established a research station in the 50s. They had a hatchery here early on, early 20s, 30s, into the 50s. And then after that, they kind of went more to a research station. And then they had a management office which is who I worked for, that advised the Park Service, kind of like a fish and game agency. Mm-hmm. But, you know, advises the state on how to set their regulations. Fish and Wildlife Service kind of kept the Park Service up to date on their,
And my history is not great, but if I remember reading, it's even before the National Park Service, there was like the predecessor to the Fish and Wildlife Services who stocked the lakes and did a lot of the fishery stuff in Yellowstone.
Correct. U.S. Fish Commission back even as early as 1889.
Yeah.
We're doing some stocking in Yellowstone National Park.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fisheries history in the park is really kind of a reflection of fisheries management history for the country, really.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So I, when you started, did you know, it sounds like you kind of just saw a poster and, and got a little lucky in that way. Did you know that there were jobs where people worked with fish in national parks?
I hate to say, I probably shouldn't even tell you this, but when
we can edit it out if we need to.
When I first moved to Bozeman, one of my coworkers said, well, have you been to Yellowstone Park yet? Because I was trying to figure out what to do for the weekend. And I said, what do you mean a park? Is it, you know, like Ferris wheel?
Yeah, does it have slides?
I've had visitors ask me where the zip lines are. So yeah, I think that's a,
well, to be fair, they're in West Yellowstone. So
well, yeah, that's true. And I want to say I was very young then. So
sure. Yeah. Sure. Lots to learn. Yeah. So you were pleasantly surprised that there were actually jobs where you could do that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool.
One of my first full weeks working for the Fish and Wildlife Service, they were doing their annual survey on Yellowstone Lake of the cutthroat trout. And so it meant spending a week on a boat gillnetting on the lake. And we spent a night in the Park Service cabin on Peel Island because we were doing work in that area and we wanted to stay close to it. And unlike typical weather on Yellowstone Lake, it was bluebird days and flat, calm water the whole full week. And then the cutthroat that we were catching, if you haven't ever seen a cutthroat trout, they are a beautiful fish.
Can you describe them for those of us who haven't seen one?
So they're called cutthroat because they have a red slash on either side under their jaw. And they, you know, kind of a typical trout, they have the same, you know, body form. And then black spots more on the tail, and you get less as you move forward toward the head. But they can get really brightly colored. They tend to be olive, yellowy, brown, and they can, especially during spawning season, they can get these brilliant red sides and opercular plates and stuff. They're just beautiful.
That's cool.
When we came out on the boat this summer, when you guys were doing your research, you were pulling out some hogs. They were huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've caught a fish bigger than Jake's 40 pound.
Not a cutthroat.
It's all about competition here. Describe to us like a typical day. So obviously there's going to be a lot of variance, but if someone asked you what your typical day like is as a fisheries biologist, what was it like? What would you tell them?
Well, so it does really vary a lot. You know, obviously in the winter, we're not doing a lot of field work. We are in the office kind of processing everything that happened last year and trying to plan ahead for next year, which includes hiring, which can be a lot of work. Doing a lot of presentations to let people know what we know and where we think we need to go next and all that kind of thing. But the field work in the summer, all my work is on Yellowstone Lake, and it's a beautiful lake. I oversee some contract work on the lake, which is 3 to 4 crews, sometimes 5, of, netters to try to depress the lake trout population. Lake trout are an invasive species on Yellowstone Lake, and they'll eat the cutthroat trout. And so we're trying to eliminate them. We're not likely going to eliminate them, but hopefully we're going to suppress them to the point where they're no longer having an impact on the cutthroat trout population. And so we have these gillnet crews that will put out miles of gillnet and lift it every day to remove the lake trout. We also have a telemetry operation where we purposely put acoustic tags in male lake trout and let them go and then kind of relocate them so we can give that information to the netters to help zero in on their day on, you know, where to put their nets and stuff. And
so that term I've heard that I heard it with something else though. It's like invasive species. You can like, you put a tracker on them and they go to where they like, you know, betray their friends, this whole idea of like a Judas species. Like, can you talk a little bit about that? That's like, that always made me laugh.
The idea of Judas fish is you put a tag in them that you can follow and they take you to where their friends are. And betray their friends. And it's not, you know, we kind of know, we pretty much know where all the lake trout habitat is, but they move around a lot. And depending on the time of year and the water temperatures, they'll be at different depths. So a lot of times the Judas fish helps you really zero in on the depths to be fishing at, which also helps you avoid the cutthroat trout if you know exactly what depths the lake trout are at. And so like, so if I'm on a boat where we're doing the tagging, we'll collect lake trout from the netters that are still in really lively condition and do surgery and implant. First, make sure they're males. We don't want to tag the females because they're the ones with the reproductive potential. So we want to make sure we kill all the females and then implant the tags, make sure the fish recover so that they'll behave normally when we release them and let them go. Or if it's actually tracking the fish, we have two hydrophones in the water on either side of the boat, which helps us give a direction to find the fish so we can zero in on their location. And so then you're basically on the lake driving predetermined transects all day until you pick up a fish and then you zero on that fish and then you continue on your way.
And for like the listeners who haven't seen Yellowstone Lake or been to it, it's a huge lake. So that's not an easy task.
Yeah. It takes us about 4 days to cover the whole lake.
Yeah. Wow.
And we don't actually even cover the whole lake because we avoid the really deep habitat because we aren't expecting to see any lake trout out there and we're not going to set nets there anyway.
And then I think another like good backstory is like, we talk about lake trout being invasive versus the Yellowstone cutthroat. I mean, I guess is there a reason why we like as managers prefer one over the other? Why are we trying to get rid of lake trout?
So the cutthroat trout, Yellowstone cutthroat trout, like I've said already a couple of times, they're just beautiful. But they are the native species in Yellowstone Lake. Yellowstone Lake is the most important population of Yellowstone cutthroat trout for that species. And just sheer numbers. And they evolved with only one other native species, which is the long-nosed dace that is, you know, gets to maybe 6 inches and is very much along just the shorelines.
That's the fish I would catch.
So they're just... The cutthroat trout are naive when it comes to a larger fish predator, piscivore. And the lake trout are native to the Great Lakes area. And they're also a beautiful fish, but they are a voracious predator. And so you take a really naive fish and then a really excellent predator and put them together. And it's just not good for the cutthroat trout. Mm-hmm. And the lake trout, I think the oldest one on record was 62 years old.
Lake trout?
Not from Yellowstone, but just species wise. So if we weren't out there taking out the lake trout, nobody else would be either. They reside deeper in the lake. They live longer. They get bigger. They have a lot higher reproductive potential than the cutthroat trout. And if left unchecked, they would decimate the cutthroat trout population.
And when you say like no one else would get them, you mean like other predators,
right,
like bears and fish and... Or bears and birds and otters and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Like birds and otters, most predators tend to target the fish when they're shallow.
Yeah.
And the lake trout don't spend much time being shallow. And then when the lake trout get big, they're too big. Like an osprey might try to grab a big fish. And then I haven't seen this personally, but one of my coworkers has seen an osprey grab of even a cutthroat that was too big for it. And then it couldn't fly off and it actually drowned.
Oh, wow.
Cause they can't they have a hard time letting go of a fish once they get their talons. Sure. Through
it's like the monkey with the banana in the barrel situation.
But yeah, lake trout, they're impressive in their ability to eat other fish. They can eat a fish. The only thing that stops them is how wide they can get their mouth open, and they can eat a fish 2/3 their own size.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Can you do that, Jake?
No. Yeah. It's like a 150-pound fish.
Burrito. That's a big burrito.
Yeah.
So you obviously know a lot about fish. And so that's an important skill to have as a fisheries biologist. What, aside from that, or maybe not even aside from that, what do you think is the most important skill for someone who thinks that that's a really cool job and might be interested in applying for jobs like that?
You know, it's probably similar to most jobs. I think the most important thing is to have a passion for what you're doing and a positive attitude and be flexible in what you're doing day to day. If you want to actually go into fisheries, a Bachelor of Science is an important aspect of your education. Typically, you're going to want to end up going back to school to specialize and get a master's degree. I would highly recommend for anybody thinking that way to get a lot of experience or as much as you can between your master's, before your master's, and after your bachelor's. It helps you get a better idea of what's available, what kind of work you can be working in, and gives you really good skills. So then when you do go back to get your master's degree, you are a better candidate because you're not learning everything all at once.
Oh, that's great advice. And you probably want to go out on a boat and make sure you don't get seasick, right? Because I mean, do people get seasick on the lake?
They have. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd imagine it gets choppy.
Yeah. And
it'd be tough.
We have had a few volunteers come out from different places, even other fisheries biologists that come out and, they're really excited to give you a hand and be helpful. And
they're looking for the horizon.
Yeah, and they're a liability.
I've been there. Before.
Well, and a quick follow-up with the masters. Does it matter if you're specializing, say if somebody's like, my goal is to work in Yellowstone, do they need to get a master's related to the species that are here? Or can you, if you happen to be, say, getting your master's in some other fish species, does that qualify you? Can you learn what you need to on the job? Or does it really help to focus in on the actual species that you'll be studying in the park that you want to end up in?
I think the broader the education you have, the better. And you can focus in when you get to the particular job. Because the other thing is, even though Yellowstone might be your goal, that might not be your next step.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's good advice. And then also, it's good to think outside of the box sometimes too. And if you have more familiarity with other habitats, other species and stuff, you can bring in maybe a new perspective that somehow is different than what people have thought of before.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like your typical day is pretty cool, especially in the summer when you're out on a boat. What is your favorite part about your job?
You can probably tell I love Yellowstone Lake. So being on the lake is awesome. But I think the most rewarding, two things are most rewarding, but one is, I work with amazing people, and being able to sit down with a coworker and talk about strategies and, how things are going, what happened over here, how we can pull that together, how we can best use our crews and, to just keep making things move forward is super rewarding. But then also taking somebody, we typically have student volunteers every summer, and they typically don't have much for experience. So taking somebody who really knows nothing about what we're doing and bringing them through a season and seeing them increase their skills and increase their confidence and get more sure about what they want to do and be excited about protecting the resource, that's pretty awesome. But then the other part is actually seeing the work that we're doing make a definite impact on protecting Yellowstone Park's resources. That's really rewarding as well.
Yeah. We'll let you slide, even though you gave us three favorites.
Yeah, we said one, but we got three. It's okay.
That's your one mulligan for this podcast. Okay.
Oops.
So with that, this is the hard question. What is the toughest part about your job?
That's a really good question too. You know, you can get frustrated with the inability to do things as quick as you want because you have to go through proper procedures to make sure, you know, just because I think something's really good to do doesn't mean it is. So there's a lot of checks and balances that you have to go through. Surprisingly.
Red tape.
Yeah. And then, so that can be really frustrating. And then also, supervision can be really challenging. It's important to be able to work well with people and not just work well with them, but communication is such an important aspect of all parts of life. And even though everybody communicates every day, it just amazes me that we all have so much more to learn on how to communicate better. So if I have an employee, for instance, how to help them be their best and get the best out of them can be really challenging, especially if for some reason they shouldn't have taken the job and don't really want to be there.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that you're, you know, doing hiring right now. When how many people are a part of your operation?
So in the fisheries program, we have Todd Cool's our leader. Brian Ertel and I are both full fish biologists that have been here quite a long time. Andy Pachani is a new streams biologist who's doing great work. And then right now we have two student biologists. They're in the Pathways program, Cody Vender and Drew McDonald. And each of us hires, with the exception of Todd, but each of us that are in the biologist series hire two technicians and one intern for the summer.
So you guys are a big operation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we have the contract crew that does a lot of the suppression netting, not all of it, but most of it. And they will have up to 20 people.
Yeah. And there's a lot of time, effort, and money that go into the fisheries program. Yeah.
Yep. And Cody and I work on the lake mostly. Brian Ertel and Andy cover streams outside of the Yellowstone Lake area.
Is that kind of how you divide it up? It's like the lake.
They're the ones that get seasick.
And then everything else. Is that the how you like divide your guys' work is the lake and then everything that's not Yellowstone Lake? That's kind of the dividing line. Yeah.
And Brian focuses more on Yellowstone Cutthroat, where Andy focuses a little bit more on the West Slope Cutthroat. But since they're both doing river stream work, they work together a lot.
Gotcha.
So you talked a little bit about kind of the tougher parts of the job. So what is it about the Park Service that keeps you here and brought you here and keeps you here, I guess?
Well, the protection of the natural resources, you know, keeping the environment and it as intact as possible and just the ecosystem function and all that. Those are all great buzzwords, but it's the beauty of everything working together that really draws you in and it makes you really enjoy it.
Yeah. And some of our listeners might not be super familiar with the National Park Service mission. We all had to get it tattooed on us when we took the jobs and Jake's is on his lower back, I think, right? Is it still there?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
but essentially the mission is preserving the natural and cultural resources, like you said, for the enjoyment, education, and inspiration of this and future generations. So, and you've touched on this, but how does your job contribute to this mission? It seems like a pretty direct and easy to see.
Yeah. We're spending a lot of time and effort suppressing the lake trout population so that the cutthroat trout population in Yellowstone Lake can thrive. And because that's the major population for that species of fish, it helps that whole species thrive. And it's a beautiful fish. Did I say that already?
Yeah. You can say that one twice. That's okay.
And then what I've learned here, like not being a big like fisherman or person who fishes, I don't know what the non-gendered version of that is, but people love to fish. It is, it's like crazy how many people are here in the summer. So it's like, you know, and the whole idea of being the, like the homeland of the Yellowstone cutthroat trout. I mean, it's like, this is like the world's largest population of that fish. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah, people come here to catch that. And it's, it seems like, you know, protecting it. And then people have that directly, that direct enjoyment. I mean, it seems like everybody appreciates being able to get out there and catch that big fish and put it on the gram.
Yeah. And not only, I mean, think about going out on Yellowstone Lake. This is a huge lake and there's, you know, what, 3 buildings on the entire lake. I mean, maybe a couple more if depending on how far away from the water you want to measure, but it's just spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're out there. Mm-hmm. You're out there. All right. Well, before we wrap up, we're going to get into what we call the nitty gritty here. So I don't want to scare listeners away. This is a fair warning. There's going to be some government jargon, but fear not, we've got your back. So we have an introductory episode, along with some links that we're going to put in the show notes that will explain all this in detail. So that said, for people interested in this type of career, and you've kind of already talked about the education aspect of it. So if I want to be a fisheries biologist, what's your job series in USA Jobs, series and GS level and all that nitty gritty?
So my GS level is GS 11 and my job series is fisheries biologist 0482. And then, like a lot of the seasonals that we're hiring this summer, they are fishery, biological technicians, parentheses fisheries, and they're, because there are a lot of different biological technicians and they're all in the GS-0404 series.
Awesome. Cool. And aside from the education aspect, is there any other formal training that someone needs to have to apply for this position or?
Not formal. You know, a bachelor's is great. But like I said, the more experience you can get with different agencies, different areas, the better off you're going to be.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any other advice for people interested in that career path aside from what you've said already?
It's a great career. It's really fun. I've worked, you know, when I left here in from my first 4 years that I was here with the Fish and Wildlife Service, I did some work with the state Wyoming Game and Fish. I worked with Fish and Wildlife Service in California, Northern Idaho, Washington. Every job I've ever had has been really fun.
Come work with Pat is what she's saying. All right. Well, before we let you go, we like to ask everyone that comes on the podcast, one final question. This one's my favorite. So what is your favorite story or memory in a national park? It doesn't have to be in Yellowstone, although you've been here a while, so there's a good chance it will be, but it doesn't have to be. It can be, you know, a trip you took during annual leave or something. But do you have any defining story or memory from a national park?
There's so many to choose from. This one's really fish related though, so I'll share it. We were doing a snorkel survey on the Olympic Peninsula and we were snorkeling Chinook salmon, which get quite big. Spring Chinook salmon in particular, they like to hide their head. They're kind of like a little kid in that if their eyes are covered, they think you can't see them. And so when you're snorkeling for them, you got to really look at the root wads and things because they kind of stick their head in the root wad and then you might miss them if you're not really looking closely. So I was coming down this stretch of stream that was actually pretty wide and flat and no cover. And the spring Chinook, I could see him. He was just in the mid-water column in front of me over this gravel bar. And he saw me and he just sunk down and sat on the bottom. And I was getting closer because I was coming downstream. And as I got closer, he like got as close to the bottom as he could. And then he actually rolled over and laid on his side.
Like until Blaine did.
Yeah. Until I went by and then he just took off. That's
yeah, awesome. If he was wearing a turtleneck shirt, he would have slumped into it.
Uh-huh. It was just so funny to see him actually like trying to hide where he had nothing to hide.
That's amazing. And you'd never heard of that like type of behavior before, or is it just something you hadn't seen before?
I had not heard or seen it. So it just made me laugh.
That's awesome. So you're making scientific observations on your vacations even.
Actually, that was work.
Oh, that was work. Well, work, vacation. Yeah. Sometimes the line gets blurred.
Right. Can I tell you my favorite question?
Yeah. That you've ever been asked, you mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody once asked me why all the Civil War battles were fought in national parks.
That is a great question. What is that? That's a causation. What's the whole thing? Correlation, not causation. Yeah.
What was your answer?
I honestly thought they were kidding, so I started laughing. So you just laughed. And I said, "Well, you know, people were very civil back then." And then I could see by the look, you know, he wasn't kidding, and so I got real apologetic real fast.
I think that happens to all of us. You get caught off guard with a question because people joke with us all the time. Yeah. They ask us silly questions. So,
well, and especially like the people with dry humor, that's like really hard to tell. Yeah. You know, it's like I don't know what to do with that. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Pat, thank you so much for joining us. It was really cool hearing about your job and learning a little bit more about fish too. So I'm excited to go fishing. I think when the season starts.
I am also excited to fish, but I have this weird, I like the touching of fish. I don't know how hard to grab them or not grab. I feel like I'm like strangling them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like mess their slime up, but then they know when I'm not holding them tight enough and then they flop around and then I drop them.
What's the safe hand? Can we get an extra credit question here? What's the safe handling for someone who's fishing? What do you wear gloves? Do you not wear gloves?
Oh, we wear gloves. Yeah. The water is really cold other reason, but it helps protect the fish and it helps give you a little bit milder grip, but you don't want to grip them tight.
I feel like I'm going to squeeze the life out of them.
And if you're angling,
don't grip it like a burrito.
Right.
Do it like
if you're angling, if you can keep them in the water while you're handling them, that keeps them calmer too.
I've seen that hashtag, keep them wet.
Okay. And grip it like a burrito, not a baby.
Yeah.
Right. Which, anyways, we'll leave it there. thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's great talking with you, Pat. Yeah. Thanks for joining.
That's it for this week's episode of What We Do. Thanks again to our guest, Pat Bigelow. And if you like what we do, rate and review the show wherever you listen. Every positive review helps new people find the show, so we really appreciate it. If you have questions or you want to learn more about a particular job, contact us using the form at go.nps.gov/whatwedopodcast. Thanks for listening.